Hey everybody, this is the Daily Drum for Monday, May 28th. It's Memorial Day, a day to honor and remember those who have served this country. But it's also the unofficial beginning of summer, and that means vacations, relaxing, and interacting with family during those all-important family reunions. But even without the family reunions, are we connecting with family the way we can or should? We were talking about that during this special previously recorded edition of the Daily Drum. So we're not taking calls tonight, but you should listen. My guests are Adrian Fikes. She's author and a soul power coach, and Dr. Johnny Parker, author and relationship coach. So talk to us tonight, you two, about the importance of family. I'll start with you, Adrian, ladies first. When you hear family, what comes to mind?
Connections.
What do you mean by that?
Roots. I think that from my experience, my family is my connection. It is my, it informs me about who I am. So even the good, the bad, and the ugly tells me a story about who I am, why I'm here, and what my experience on this earth has been, and what I'm leaving behind when I'm no longer here.
Does it give you a warm feeling when we are talking about family, or does it sometimes provide you with a little consternation?
Okay, so both. Families are complex, and we should allow the relationships to be complex. There are people that I would go to the moon and back for, and there are people that I would not answer the phone for. I love my family. I have a huge family. And so you're not always going to get along with everyone, but I guarantee there's some people in that family tree that you don't know yet. And you should make the attempt to get to know them so that you can find out more about you. Because every person that has a blood relationship to you or is adopted into that family, even some play cousins, can tell you something about yourself.
Johnny, are we too busy in this day and age to connect with relatives the way we perhaps may have back in the day?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You have to be intentional about family relationships. You don't drift to a great family. You don't drift to great storytelling. You in families, and when I think of families are around stories, the stories that we tell. And so, yes, we are. Because with technology, it's a wonderful thing, but how do we be intentional about the kind of family, the kind of story that we want to weave, that we want to tell as a family? And you don't drift to that. You don't bump into that. You got to be deliberate about a reunion and getting together and connecting.
So what happens to us when it comes to relating to our family? When we're kids, a lot of us, we've hung out with our cousins, the play cousins, the aunts, the uncles, the play aunts, the play uncles. But then something happens as we grow older. What happens in that transition?
Well, I think a lot of things happen. As Adrian said, relationships and families can be very, very complex. You have different people, and just like a story, in every story there's characters that show up. Some of those characters are wonderful. Some of those characters are a little less to be desired. And in every family and every story, there's all kinds of events and experiences that happen. And so what happens as we grow older, again, we wander. It's easy to wander from what grandma and what grandpa used to do. It's easy to wander from the stories we used to tell on the front porch. As I'm a New York guy. I grew up on the steps of, grew up in Queens, and on our front porch, grandma and grandpa would tell stories about the South and growing up in the South and then bringing that to the North. And so we lose that intentionality. And the sad thing about that is I'm also a pastor, so I've done a lot of funerals. What happens at a funeral? People are telling stories about grandma's lemonade, about auntie's cheesecake. They're telling stories, and no one's on their phone, but they're telling stories, and there's laughter, there's some pain, there's some tears. You get all the human emotions, but what happens at a funeral, those stories start to get told. And so, again, I can't emphasize it enough. You don't drift to a meaningful family reunion, a meaningful family experience, you go to it intentionally and deliberately.
This is a special previously recorded edition of the Daily Drum on this Memorial Day. We are talking about families and a lot of interesting things to discuss tonight, but we aren't taking any phone calls because, again, this is previously recorded. But we certainly invite you to listen to find out how you can connect, reconnect, and the importance of family connections, whether it's during a family reunion or just any time during the year. Adrian, when, and it's interesting, Johnny just talked about funerals. And a lot of times we only see those great family members that we love and remember and we miss during funerals and weddings. Mm. How do we do better than that?
You know, okay, so I'm going to try not to get emotional.
It's okay. Because we are talking about family.
Yes.
Here.
Yeah. And on my way in here, you know, I checked my Facebook page and there was a Facebook memory from 2 years ago when I was down in Chapel Hill saying goodbye to an aunt. And honestly, I don't know who tagged me in this picture. I don't know where it came from. I'd never seen it before, but I'm sitting next to a cousin of mine that I hadn't seen in years. It was one of those cousins you played with, probably hadn't seen him in 20 years or so. And we were reconnecting and he wasn't well. And we had a chance to have a moment to talk. And this picture was kind of taken after that conversation, it looks like. And I thought about all of the people that I connected at that funeral, all of the people that I saw at that funeral, with people that didn't know me. You know, my father had passed away 20 years ago, but coming back home, I was able to connect with people who not only knew him, but could tell me things about him that I didn't know. And as I looked at that picture, I looked at all of the people in that room that have already passed away in 2 years, you know, both blood relatives and people from the town, because, you know, we're getting to that age where we used to be the children. Now we became the parents and now we're transitioning into the elders. And so, you know, my father's brothers and sisters, there was always, you know, 11 of them. There were tons of them. And now I have one uncle left. And so as my cousins are looking around for the elders and we're realizing we are the elders, and what is our responsibility, and how are we passing down our connections that our parents tried to have to each other and to our children? So one of the things, you know, I talked about in the book that I wrote, one of the things that I talk about is not making it hard. Something we all love is pictures. And after my aunt died, you know, it was a whole story behind that. I ended up going down to spend time with my sister in Atlanta, who ended up with the family pictures. Chances are there's somebody, whether it's you or a cousin or that aunt that never really moved around, has pictures. Go look at the pictures. You know, we sat down, she had 6 crates of pictures, and we sat down at her kitchen table between Christmas and New Year's and we went through pictures. And the kids were playing video games and coming in the kitchen and eating, and they were interested and they were not interested. But we were going through pictures of us as children. And I was, you know, taking cell phone pictures and sending them to my cousins of their parents, pictures they'd never seen before. And as my sister and I sat around going through pictures, who is this? What was that? Do you remember this? Our connection got stronger. You know, the issues that we had began to melt away. You know, the healing began happening because what we were remembering was the love. What we were remembering is we had an argument and you had one perspective, I had another. And we don't even really remember what all of that was about. All we know is we're being reminded of the good times and the love. And so I always encourage everybody to gather, you know, with the relatives you know and the ones that you don't, because it's a good chance that your father's cousin has a picture of your father you've never seen before, and that nephew that you've never really spent time with has a memory of you that you've never heard before.
She mentioned something, Johnny, that I think is really, really critical. She's talking about healing. Even the best family relationships are not pristine.
Not at all.
And when she was discussing the healing, sometimes time heals all wounds, and like Adrian just said, you don't even remember. But how do you heal from things that you do remember with family, whether they live around the corner,
sure,
or they're living in Virginia or North Carolina or Jamaica, for that matter?
Absolutely. And time does heal as long as we're willing to do the hard work, the heart work that's required for that healing process.
What do you mean by heart work?
Well, the idea that, think about this, then we go to a play. On the front stage of a play is the performance, is the public self. It's how we show up publicly. You can see I'm a man, a woman, African-American, age or stage of life. You can see it's public. But then there's the backstage. The backstage at a play is where preparation happens. And metaphorically in our lives, the same thing happens. In the backstage, it's no one gets an all-access pass to your backstage. It's the people that you invite back there. So our families, we're born into our families. We have the families we have, whether it's functional or dysfunctional. The relationships and friendships are people that we choose to be a part of the story. The family story is the family story, and I'm born into that family system. So when I talk about the idea of heart work, the heart work is what happens backstage. It's the me being honest with what happened in the family, or pain or abandonment or addictions and abuse that happened in the family, which makes Thanksgiving and Christmas very, very difficult, because I have to come together with people that I haven't made peace with. I got to see Uncle, and we got issues when I was a kid. He smacked me or whatever, and we never really processed that. Now,
but
I got to.
You deserve that smack.
That's what he thought, Harold.
Because you cussed out grandma.
Yeah, cussed out grandma. Yeah, exactly. I wore his sweater or whatever, and now he's asking for the cranberry sauce, and I don't want to hand it. I want to throw it at him. You see what I'm saying? So now we gotta break bread and have turkey and stuffing with folks that I know what I'm supposed to get together with you, and I got guilt if I don't come to the family dinner or reunion. But I also know I got to see that uncle, that auntie, that you know, and so there's that piece, and that's why those holidays become, and reunions can be very, very, can be very difficult for many families when we haven't done what I call the hard work, the heart work, because I got to be honest with myself about whatever wounds I experience in my family. Because if I don't, what happens is this, and I illustrate this when I do my seminars, I'm carrying a Samsonite luggage in my hand. If I try to connect with you, Harold, as a man, or Adrian, or in my 29 years of marriage, guess what they're going to get? They're going to get my stuff. I didn't leave home without it. Mm-hmm. So now wife got my stuff. Anyone I try to connect with on my team or people I'm trying to work with, they're getting my stuff. And so my stuff is either going to be a fragrance or an odor. Okay. And I got it. And so a lot of our stuff comes from our family systems. Mm-hmm. Stuff that has never been resolved, that's just been past pain that has been passed on from great-grandpa to grandpa to grandma to what, you know, so it gets passed on to, and so in a healthy family, healthy families take ownership for the pain, for the abandonment, for the wounds. We don't blame others on why it has happened, but I own my stuff as mom, dad, grandma, grandpa. So that's what healthy families do, and that's the hard work, heart work stuff that is necessary in forming and building these healthy family relationships and systems.
You're listening to a special previously recorded edition of The Daily Drum on this Memorial Day. We're talking about connecting with family. So we're not taking any phone calls tonight. My guests are Adrian Fikes. She's an author and soul power coach, and Dr. Johnny Parker. He's an author and relationship coach. Johnny was just talking, Adrian, about the heart work and the hard work. And I started that portion of this conversation because of a reference that you made when you went to spend time with your family. Did the stuff just melt away? And I say the stuff, I don't mean just the stuff. I mean, did the stuff?
No.
Or did you have to sit down with some folks and say, listen? And if so, what was the process?
So the beautiful thing about it is the higher our expectations create a lot of problems with what we think we should be doing. And, you know, for example, my relationship with my sister, we had, you know, I'd moved back to the D.C. area from Atlanta, and we really had not been in contact for personal reasons for about 20 years. We'd seen each other. We were cordial, you know, but we really weren't close. There was no expectation when I went down there that we were going to sit down and talk about this, or we were going to, you know, we're going to heal this. We're going to make this right. This was, let's look through these pictures. And so as we looked through the pictures, there was no pressure to discuss. There were some, you know, third rails that we touched while we were looking in the pictures, and we just were like, okay, let's let that be. Let's drift back into something that is easier to talk about. So that was 2 years ago. And through successive conversations and more interaction and, you know, making the effort to spend time with family and make room for family. When I got back to Atlanta, I went to see my nephew's football game. Like, we were making the time to spend time with family. They came up here. We went to the museum, like, with all of this. And I tell you honestly, it was probably, I'm going to say February of this year, where we had that conversation about that thing that had happened.
In person or on the phone?
In person.
Okay.
In person. I'm sorry. We were on the phone.
Okay.
Most of my relatives are, we FaceTime and stuff, so it feels like it was in person. But, okay. You know, we spent a lot of time talking on the phone. We've spent time together, but we have spent a lot of time on the phone. And we had a conversation in February after coming back from another trip to Atlanta, and had a conversation. And we were, and it was the love and the trust that we had built back up that created this space for us to begin discussing what had happened and where that breakdown came in. And so restoring relationships doesn't happen at a cookout on, you know, Memorial Day weekend, but you can begin the process of remembering what was good about that relationship. You can begin the process of lifting up what you love about that person and give it time.
Here's the thing that I find so fascinating about what you're saying, because you were suggesting that there was a breakdown 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So you were what, 5? And or something.
Black don't crack.
Right, okay. There you go. You'll take that. But for the sake of discussion, let us assume that there was a breakdown when you were 10 years old or 15 years old. Still children.
Yeah. Right.
And now when you are 35 or 40 or what have you, are you different people? That and possibly better people from when this breakdown of relationships happened? Are you renewing something, or are you starting something new?
You know, listening to your story, Adrian, again, I'm moved by just how deliberate you and your sister were about that. That didn't just happen. That's what I mean. You didn't just drift to that. You guys looked through the pictures. You had that conversation. And I would suggest, I would think, Harold, what happens as life happens, as we get older, we go to college, we go to the military, we go to trade school, whatever the career path may be for us. And as you get older and you start seeing life through a different lens, and you have different scenes of life, you start, losses start happening, bodies changing as you're getting older. And I think somehow something deep within us says, I want to connect back to what you said earlier about my roots. Who am I at the core? We all ask that question at the core. Who am I? What do I want? And I would wonder if some of that kind of processing happened for you, for your sister. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of getting better, we don't just become better because, you know, you have to, it's some work to become better, you know, to go into the land of better. I have to be what I call the CGO, the chief growth officer of my own life. Mm-hmm. Healthy me, strong we. I got to be a healthy person. And so I'd like to think that as you and your sister went through the, as you all got older and experienced some life, that you did want to get and connect with what really, really matters. Who am I at my core, and where have I come from, and the people that really matter. And so I applaud you all for doing that work to connect and rebuild that relationship.
Thank you.
We are talking about connecting with family on this Memorial Day. This is a special previously recorded edition of The Daily Drum. We're not taking calls tonight. My guests are Adrienne Fikes. She's an author and soul power coach, and Dr. Johnny Parker, author and relationship coach. Again, we're not taking any phone calls, but you may be able to receive a lot of great information and some thought processing if you listen to this conversation. So we invite you to continue listening. And one of the things that happened very recently that was really interesting when you're talking about family connections, and that's the royal wedding, where we've seen Prince Harry's family, his humongous family. Granted, that's his home, but we can argue that getting family members to come to this event was not an issue because the royal family has a few quarters, to put it lightly. And yet, Meghan Markle, the only family member there was her mother. Mm-hmm. What, Adrienne, does that say to you when you talk about family connections or lack thereof? Because we don't know the intimate details. We obviously realize there was an issue related to her father, not only his health, but the way that things were happening leading up to it. But again, the only family member that was there was her mother.
I thought that I saw the official portrait, and you know, she was standing there in the middle of all of that with that melanin, and it was a beautiful picture. But I also thought about, as I started realizing she was the only one from Meghan's family, it was beautiful. It was beautiful because it goes back to our expectations. There was so much pressure being put on this young woman as she was getting ready to get married to put on a face that other people expected. They expect your father to walk you down the aisle. They expect your family to be there. They expect, you know, your mother to be a certain way. And they presented their absolute authentic self. This is who I am. This is my mother and her nose ring and, you know, and her locks, and she is beautiful and I love her. And I'm, you know, she's, it was exactly what it was supposed to be. And I love the fact that they honored who they really were instead of trying to create this mask, you know, this image that we, you know, weddings are stressful times because people are putting their expectations on the day instead of allowing the day to be what it is.
But with Prince Harry's family, with the royal family, we know how big they are. We don't know, even though, you know, Meghan Markle is or was an actor here in the United States. Was there perhaps the hope that there could have been, if not her father, other family members there? And I think that's as it relates to the discussion about having family support. If your mom is there and she's the rock, and that's wonderful, and I think that's a beautiful thing. I think for me, I would have loved to have seen some other folks there in support of her. She may not have felt lonely. It felt a little lonely for me.
Right. Well, you know, the thought that came to my head was it wasn't about us. Mm-hmm. And if she was lonely, okay, you know. But the reality of the situation is she presented exactly what it was.
My family.
This is my family. And I love it because we know that there was a father and I guess there were a brother and a sister that were not there. It also illustrates the point of drawing boundaries around how you interact with your family and where you allow them in and where you draw the line and say, not this time. So, you know, and I don't know the details. There was, you know, she's got a troubled, strained relationship with her brother and sister, and they did not come to the wedding. And I'm sure there were people that were like, that is your brother and sister. They should be there. You should have invited them. They're supposed to be there. But the reality of the situation, it was a beautiful day. And for whatever reason, which was her own, she decided that they would not be there. It's a beautiful, if you are going to engage with your family, you have to have personal boundaries around what you allow and what you don't. And you have to be honest with yourself. You know, if that relative sets you off, and this is your day, why would you allow them to come in and disrupt your day when you can set that boundary and say, this doesn't mean that I don't love you, but you won't be here today?
We've been talking so much about us reaching out to family, but how do you receive when family reaches out to you? And I'm not suggesting in any way, shape, or form that it is some kind of Machiavellian attempt to connect just because they happened to hear that you won the lottery yesterday. But but you know, all jokes aside, what if you hear from a family member that you haven't heard from in years and never thought about contacting them, Johnny? Should you just take it at face value?
Well, certainly it's awkward. You haven't heard from them in a while, so you're wondering, there's a reason for this call. And so being able to hear and entertain whatever is going on and listening, and of course, oftentimes there's a want behind that call. And
let's assume that there isn't. But assuming that they're reaching out to you for the same reason that we're having this conversation, because they realize that I miss my family and I need to connect with my family because that's what I feel we're supposed to do.
Sure. And I call that a rewrite of the story. Maybe the story that we experienced when we grew up together, maybe that was one story. But in every story, there's an edit that can happen. We can look at what do we need to stop doing, start doing, or continue doing, and how do we rewrite that story? What can the story look like going forward? So, for example, I grew up, my grandfather, Baptist pastor from Mississippi, he had 11 sons and my mother and 11 sons and four girls. So I grew up literally with going to high school with my uncles. I'm 56. I got Uncle 57, 58. I'm the only guy who went to high school. My uncles asked me for money. So, yeah. So we had role reversal. Yeah. So that's the story. And now that story is very, very different today. I mean, I looked up to them for leadership, for guidance. They would protect me because I was the smallest guy in the neighborhood, and so everyone knew that that you mess with me, you're messing with 10 other guys, and so I'm picking fights, and so that I'm picking fights and setting these guys up to finish off my dirty work. Right?
He's not being helpful at all. No.
Adrian. So that's the kind of nephew that they got. So now it's a different story. I'm a leader in my family. Okay, I'm a leader in my family. I have a place of I'm esteemed in my family, and so it's a different experience. And quite frankly, it was awkward for me because I'm so used to. I'm almost tempted to tell you my childhood name. So it's right there, but I'm scared to say it.
Go ahead.
This is on the radio.
This is on the radio. I'm gonna put it out there. We're gonna be vulnerable, right?
There you go.
So growing up in New York, I was known as Choo Choo. Choo, because I love trains.
Yeah. Okay, I like that.
Yeah, you like that. But that works when you're 10, but that doesn't work when you're 56, and some of the guys on Facebook still want to call me Choo-Choo. I'm like, dude, I'm 56. Don't be Choo-Chooing me on Facebook.
Call me Locomotive.
we upgraded, right? We're Locomotive. Yeah, no Choo-Choo. So, you only will say that if you're from New York, because no one outside of New York would know that,
mm-hmm.
Okay? So the story is very, very different now in terms of with my uncles, who I love deeply, and we get together for events. It's a different story. I'm an equal. I'm not choo-choo. I'm not the little guy who you got to go defend. Now we're equals. We're friends, and I call them by their first name. Some I don't, but most of my they're on a first name basis. So it's a very different story today than it once was.